Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hi, everyone. Let's talk about our Amazon link at bobseska.com. Whether you're shopping for yourself or if you're buying music by one of our excellent indie bands, don't forget to use our Amazon link just beneath the logo at bobseska.com. Our special link will take you to the front page of amazon.com where you can go shopping until you're dropping. And by doing so through our link, we receive a teeny tiny commission on some of your purchases. Thanks for shopping through our Amazon link. And now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Yellowstone, established through an act signed by Ulysses S. Grant, was the nation's first national park, March 1st, 1872.
It's getting late, sir. I was wondering, are we through for the evening?
Well, we're through with work, Josh. But this part's fun. I'm a national park buff, Josh.
I'm sorry, sir?
I say I'm a national park buff. I'll bet you didn't know that about me.
Well, I didn't know that about you, sir, but I'm certainly not surprised.
Why is that?
You're quite a nerd, Mr. President.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Is it nerd-like to know that Everglades National Park is the largest remaining subtropical wilderness in the continental United States and has extensive mangrove forests?
Just a little bit, yes.
There are 54 national parks in this country, Josh.
Please tell me you haven't been to all of them.
I have been to all of them. I should show you my slide collection.
Oh, would you?
Grand Canyon, Bryce Canyon, Badlands, Capitol Reef, Acadia, which is so often overlooked.
You should certainly feel free to keep talking, but I need to go home so that I can be back in my office in 4 hours.
Dry Tortugas, Petrified Forest, North Cascades, Joshua Tree, Shenandoah National Park, right here in Virginia. We should organize a staff field trip to Shenandoah. I can even act as the guide. What do you think?
Good a place as any to dump your body.
What was that?
Bob Seska!
Hello, Seska. You're looking radiantly maternal.
The Bob Seska Show!
You know, when you're talking about national parks, never forget Yosemites. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, August 4, 2020, and this is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com. Hi, my name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hello. Day 1,293 of the Trump crisis, 91 days until the 2020 presidential election. And oh, look, sitting right over there, it's my good friend. Oh, what's his real name?
Mike Elson.
Thank you. But his radio name is Buzz Burbank. Hi, Buzz.
Hi, Bob. Hi, everybody. Hi. You know, I have been to Shenandoah National Forest also.
Yep.
And I've also been to the Dry Tortugas.
Ah, lovely. But, I hear they're lovely this time of year.
They weren't dry when I left. So he's Bob, I'm Buzz, and we promise not to laugh about Louie Gohmert. I'm lying. Things are not going well for Donald Trump. It seems like I say that week after week, but it's just as true this week as it's been all along. Trump says if he doesn't win re-election, he'll just go on and do something else.
Sure.
In other words, he hasn't decided what kind of work to do in prison. TikTok is in the news again this week. Reports say TikTok will now be run by Microsoft here in the U.S. So get used to seeing the words TikTok is shutting down.
Don't forget the updates. Don't forget the restarts.
Now this week, and Trump's the latest thing, he's upset about the hurricane. He was disappointed to learn that Isaias is not a Chinese word. He wanted to blame it.
Right. China.
Exactly. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg keeps scaring the bejesus out of us with her many frequent trips to the hospital. At this point, I'm pretty sure she's just doing it for the attention. Don't you think?
She's making it all up.
And here now is today's Bob Seska Show pronunciation guide.
Gotcha.
If you're calling Trump a dictator, you are saying it wrong. It's pronounced Dick Traitor.
All right.
Would you like to hide that Trump in a padded room? Could we just decide to lock him away real soon? He could gloat and tweet and brag about inaugural signs. Tell him
the great Rocky Mountain Mike, Marion Ann Arbor, one of the classics.
Indeed.
Love that one so much. See, three things that Donald Trump has to keep in mind for his future. Right. Same with Junior, same with Eric, same with Ivanka.
Yes.
Three things. You got to talk about go bags, passports, and non-extradition nations. Just my policy is always to be prepared, and I'm just passing that along to them.
A lot of I've had a go bag. You've had a go bag, but ours were for natural disasters.
Yeah.
This is to run from the law.
That's right. The Trumps, they're all going to be on the lam a year from now if we're doing
Think. You would think, especially I think with this latest Cy Vance subpoena.
Oh my God! Yeah,
Bush. I think the Manhattan DA's office is going to win this. I think they're going to get the data. And I think that it means Trump is not only in trouble now and prior to the election, but will be in serious trouble and very likely headed for jail once he's out of office, once he is out of office.
Yeah, in fact, they're looking at the hush money payments. They're looking at bank and insurance fraud. These are things that are going to be relatively easy to prove. Once Cy Vance has the Trump financial documents, they can kind of look at the applications, which they can easily get from insurance companies. They can get it from real estate lenders. They can just cross-reference everything and say, oh, they inflated the value of their properties for the sake of insurance applications, but they devalued the value of their properties when it came to things like tax returns. And so that's going to be really easy to look at. I'm sure he's got team of accountants ready to dig in.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But more than that, a team of lawyers.
This is
Trump buying time.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court's already ruled that he does not have immunity.
Yeah.
So he's creating an artificial immunity by delaying this.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the appeals are all about. That's what the court challenges are all about, is trying to put this off as late as possible, which, much like his handling of the coronavirus, may work to his detriment, especially if it all blows up just before the election.
I know. God, you know, look, if we do everything that we need to do, if we continue to press, hopefully Joe Biden will win this election. If we press Joe Biden, we continue to do that, I seriously believe we're going to have an attorney general who will prosecute these things. But it really doesn't matter, because like this Cy Vance thing alone, not only is the Cy Vance investigation unpardonable, Donald Trump cannot touch that with his presidential powers. He can't even go there in any way, shape, or form, even if it means the ridiculousness of pardoning himself.
Right.
There's no real way to wiggle out of this. And so far, the courts have been on the side of Cy Vance, especially in that particular equation. So,
and I think they'll continue to be.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. But maybe Donald Trump can get himself a tent or something at the local sporting goods store and then head out to Yosemites, which is apparently a national park in the United States. I didn't know that. I thought it was a fun way to wave to Jewish people. Hey, yo, Semites, what's up? That was Bradley Whitford had that one today on Twitter. Have you heard this yet today, Buzz?
No, this is one I've not heard. No.
Okay, this is High Pitch Biff talking about conservation of national parks and things like that. Things that he's actively selling off to oil interests and so on, and coal interests.
When young Americans experience the breathtaking beauty of the Grand Canyon, when their eyes widen in amazement as Old Faithful bursts into the sky, when they gaze upon Yosemites, towering sequoias, their love of country grows stronger, and they...
Shut up. He says...
The Yosemites are a sect, a religious sect, that live in Pennsylvania, and they don't believe in electric can openers. That's all I know.
That's right. Oh, man. So he goes to retcon his F up there in the middle, and then instead of pronouncing it correctly, he goes to Yosemites for some reason, which
yes,
there's not even an N in Yosemite. I don't know where he's getting the extra N in there, but, you know.
If I were a speechwriter, I would include all the things he can't say. Aluminum, you know, United States of America,
of
those.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. Well, in serious news, holy shit, did you see the video of that series of explosions in Beirut?
Oh, no, I've not actually seen the video. I've been reading about it online, but I haven't seen the actual explosions yet.
Well, because it was at the port, it was over water. So when the explosion happened, you have this giant, almost nuclear-like burst of water vapor.
Oh, a huge amount of damage, and now we're getting reports of a lot of injuries. This is just breaking as we're... beginning the show today.
Are they thinking maybe this is a human being caused, or is this just some sort of volatile fuel or something?
I think it's too early to speculate. It sounds from your description like a boat or a ship docked there. Something in the cargo hold, perhaps, that was submerged beneath the water that exploded. Jeez. And as you've said, it could be safe cargo. It could have been an intentional bomb. It is, after all, Beirut. So, you know, I think it's just too early. One of the things I hate about breaking news, and I try to report some much breaking news online on both Twitter and Facebook, and I consider it a service. And honestly, I think it helps remind people of my presence and that I'm covering and watching these things.
Yeah.
But I also hate it because there's so much we don't know when news breaks. I hate breaking news. I hate 24/7 news channels for this reason.
Yeah.
Because the early reports, whether it's a fire in your hometown or an explosion in Beirut, the early reports, early information is often sketchy, wrong, contradicted. The story hasn't gelled yet. One of the things I enjoy about my weekly newscast, as opposed to the way I used to do it daily, is that I have time to see how things shake out, where the dust settles. And then I can paint a really accurate picture, I think, of, hey, what just happened here? Well, here's the story and the story behind it.
Me, I like to just blurt out all the mistaken information as soon as it comes in. Like, I don't care if it's verified or not. Here you go. Here's what's going on. I don't care if it's right. No, I'm serious. In all seriousness, you're doing the right thing, and that's what everyone should do. There's this immediacy, though, about social media, about the internet, where this competition occurs to be the first one to report something or another. And it's a bad thing.
I worked once with a guy who complained a lot. And one of the things he complained about was the fact that the 24/7 news channels would get things wrong as they were reporting on breaking news. And I said, well, you know, here's the solution. If you don't want to be upset, turn it off. You know, I don't know that got through, but that really is the point. Talking to various people in various conversations, you know, it's important as a guy in news. It's important, I believe, for you to keep up on what's going on. I also think it's important for you to step away, turn off the 24/7 news channels, go outside, get some fresh air, some sunshine, play with the dog. There's more to life than just that. You must be informed to be a responsible citizen, but you must also take time for yourself.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah. What? There's this other thing going around right now, too, speaking of the news. That's right, the coronavirus. Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about that in this context quite a bit here, but the full Axios interview with Jonathan Swan and Trump dropped this morning. Everyone's been talking about it all over social media from the perspective of, oh, my God, what a train wreck, and also, wow. Jonathan Swan's a good interviewer when it comes to Donald Trump, at least, because he doesn't take any shit. And I was kind of amazed at the amount of guff that Jonathan Swan was giving to Trump, Trump refused to stand up and storm out of the room like he often does.
Right. I was impressed that Trump didn't, the brave Sir Donald didn't run away.
I know.
But he was determined to try to win his case, and he failed miserably, of course, mm-hmm. because he's an ignorant putz. But yeah, Jonathan Swan was brilliant and unrelenting, as more journalists should have been since 2016.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that Jonathan Swan was doing throughout is Trump would be saying something, and then Jonathan Swan would throw in these asides like, that's not true. No, what you're saying, that's not accurate. And that was happening throughout. So it was throwing Donald Trump off balance a little bit, but I don't think Trump was actually hearing some of those things because he was so focused on forming his own message.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that you get out of this is that Donald Trump, for being a serial liar, is a terrible liar. And I think, Buzz, a lot of what we see as Donald Trump's stupidity is actually Donald Trump trying desperately to wiggle out of some of his lies or try to expand upon the lies, to elaborate on the lies, and they just come off more and more ridiculous. It's like It's like Tommy Flanagan, the old John Lovitz character on SNL.
Don't underestimate the stupidity factor, you are right.
Oh, I will never underestimate the stupidity factor. That is never a problem with me. But I mean, here on coronavirus, Jonathan Swan says, look at South Korea, for example, 51 million population, 300 deaths. And then Trump goes, and you can just hear your own Trump supporting friends and family members saying the same thing that Trump says right here. Trump goes, you don't know that. And Swan goes, I do. And then Trump says, you don't know that. And then Swan says, you think they're faking their statistics? And Trump goes, I won't get into that because I have a very good relationship and a blah, 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 right, blah, right, blah, blah, right. blah. That's one of those little strategies that you hear from people who you know who support Donald Trump, and you quote a number back to them, and they can't defend that number, so instead they impugn the source of the number. They say, oh, well, you're getting that. Where'd you get that from? That can't be real. And so that's one of the little tricks they often use. I don't know if you've experienced that.
I have, and I know for a fact that I've been that I'm repeating here now what I was saying in July of last year, and almost every month since. These are the responses and the defenses of a schoolboy.
Yeah,
and that is obviously where this began with Donald Trump. The difference is, unlike other schoolboys, he never grew out of it.
No.
It was in Neverland, where he never had to grow up. And he didn't, and he hasn't. And so, that is his defense. That is his modus operandi. But it's also coming from a man who's incredibly uneducated. I hesitate to say undereducated. I would go so far as to say uneducated.
Yeah.
It shows in his grammar, punctuation, spelling, certainly his public speaking. I saw a clip on Twitter today of an old Fred Armisen character from back when Amy Poehler was hosting a Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live. And Fred Armisen's character was essentially the man who never finished a sentence.
That's right.
And the comparison was made to Donald Trump. And mm-hmm. that's Trump. It's for him, it's about deflecting. It's about defense. It has been since he was a kid. It was that way during the Russia investigation. It's that way now.
Yep.
It will always be that way with him. And I've just come to accept it as a trait.
That's right. And in fact, here is that clip of Fred Armisen playing the guy who can't finish his sentences from SNL about 10 years
this
ago.
Here's Trump.
It's the reason. I wake up like anybody. Most Americans, you education, any border, if Helsinki, if Oslo, I think any publication, we would, isn't it integral? Isn't it the most important? It's the substance. It's the very idea that we can unite. That makes me feel personal. I'm not, look.
Do you have a point? Do you have an actual point?
Do I have a point? Do we, Here's a better. No, here's a better question. Will you?
Okay. All right. That the great Fred Armisen, man. That was precious, yeah. Huh?
That was great.
Holy crap. It's exactly right. I mean, here's the thing. Donald Trump knows that no matter what he says, his fanboys are going to repeat it. His base is going to eat it up. Yeah, that's right. So he's not overly concerned about whether or not the shit that he says holds water with the normals. He's only concerned about his fanboys. I mean, I've said this for a while now. Donald Trump could get onto television. He could step up to the podium in the press room and announce that he's going to be making jetpacks made of beef. And his fanboys will go, yay, jetpacks made of beef. Finally, now we finally have our jetpacks made of beef. Thank God. And so he knows this. So that's how he at least gets away with it. And this is the danger of Donald Trump. He at least gets away with this crap with 40% of the voting population.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
There you are. Yeah.
I'm going to call foul. Yeah. I'm going to call foul on that 40%. Thank you. There's the foul buzzer. I don't buy it, I also know from looking at the poll numbers that his support is shrinking and fading away. As we've said before, there will always be that insane 15% that will support him no matter what. They'll parrot him no matter what. But there are a lot of others in that alleged 40% who have faded or are fading on him, especially, Bob, as the pandemic gets permeates Trump country in the Midwest, the Upper South, the heart of Trump country, as it gets sick now and sees the lack of a response to this pandemic, that support will continue to fall away. His lies are now affecting people's lives and deaths, and that has a lot more meaning. There will always be the people that you see on the social media videos screaming the N-word or slapping a Burger King clerk.
God,
You know, or whatever. You're always going to have that. A video and you know, the cell phone and social media have given us a better look at that.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a good thing, that we need to know what's out there, but we also need to know that's not even a majority of Trump supporters, much less a majority of the general public. And among the Trump supporters, that base is shrinking. So, yeah, he will always be believed when he continues to tell these lies, Bob. But the number of people who believe him has clearly shrunk and continues to shrink.
To your point, Chris Hayes had an interesting observation about a statistic. He was mentioning that the Trump support for his handling of the coronavirus is at about 34%.
Right.
34% approval of Trump's handling of the coronavirus. And so Chris Hayes said, well, that is the high point of the Donald Trump approval rating. Like, that's the maximum number. That's the maximum percentage of people who support him. So it's actually closer to 34. So
You and I were saying months and months and months ago, gosh, I wish I had a way to keep track of this. But I remember us conversing on the air about the fact that when his numbers got down to around 33%, that would be it. It would be all over for him. And I'll repeat it again. I've been repeating it every week now. The gap between his alleged 40% overall approval rating and the 34% approval that he really has, when you look at specific issues like coronavirus, that gap between 34% and 40%, that is strictly there for the cult of personality. When it comes to making an actual decision, the real support is down at 34%.
Yeah.
When it comes to, do you like the guy? Because he's so brash and quote unquote, you know, says what's on his mind and that sort of thing, then the number is much higher. I don't think this election will be about that. And there's so much that's different. I've been studying this heavily this week about all the huge differences between 2020 and 2016.
I hope it doesn't end up in the same place. That's my only desire right now.
I just
now
don't see
point.
How I know that I'm not supposed to go out on a limb and people are going to holler, but I think I'm pretty safe in looking at a number of things here. Trump doesn't have a Hillary this time.
Yeah.
One of the reasons so many people voted for Trump in 2016 is because they didn't want to vote for Hillary. And although there are Biden critics, they are not not nearly as great a number as they were against Hillary. Even many Democrats had doubts about Hillary, or certainly a lack of enthusiasm about her, and Republicans were never going to stand for it. So that has changed. The pandemic and the near depression that it's brought, those are not going to change between now and Election Day. There's a tremendous amount of things are. Trump doesn't have his rallies anymore because of the pandemic. He's lost that pulpit that he had in 2016. So much is different this time. Mm-hmm. And with his loss of credibility, especially lately with the coronavirus, and to a large degree his handling of the racial inequality protests, he has lost credibility. And I expect even that 34% to go down.
Well, you know, in a sane world, we wouldn't have to work this hard to defeat this buffoon.
That's the thing.
I keep thinking about. Imagine, speaking of Hillary Clinton, imagine if Hillary Clinton or Susan Rice or Barack Obama had said this of the Benghazi attack. Imagine if those people had said, it is what it is. I mean, can you imagine the reaction from the Republicans? I know this is a well-worn exercise that we always do. Imagine if Obama said something that Trump said. But we have to keep going back to that because it is astonishing. Donald Trump was asked about coronavirus deaths by Jonathan Swan in this Axios interview. And Donald Trump says, they are dying. That's true. And it is what it is.
And that should be on every bit of Democratic advertising between now and Election Day.
Yep.
That's thank you for giving us that slogan. That's not the first time he said that about the death count, that it is what it is. Even take Hillary and Obama and everybody else out of it. How cold do you have to be inside to say about mass death? It is what it is.
It is what it is, especially if you're the president who presided over that mass death.
Right,
It is what it is. So Swan looked over these charts. There was a sequence in the interview where Donald Trump's got a bunch of charts printed out. And Donald Trump barely knows how to. He's like Alex Jones. I got the documents right here, Jonathan Swan. Look at these documents. Got a paper. I got lots of paper. These are just printouts from InfoWars. But you know what? I'm going to do them anyway. I'm going to talk about them anyway because it confuses you. But at the same time, it makes perfect sense to the dummies that are watching. So Swan looked over these charts that Trump is fumbling around with and goes, oh, you're doing death as a proportion of cases. I'm talking about death as a proportion of population. That's where the U.S. is really bad, much worse than South Korea, Germany, etc. The president actually responded by saying this, you can't do that. And then Swan says, why can't I do that? The president continued to defend his statistics while Swan said, it's a perfectly reasonable line of questioning. You're not reporting it correctly, Jonathan, Trump said. I think I am, Swan said. That's another one of those drop-ins where he's just like, he's rapid fire kind of responding like that.
And very matter of fact, I think I am.
Yeah.
You know, he's just very quick.
And that's something that can happen inside the press room, too. I'm just saying.
It could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just saying. We're just saying. And listen, I don't want to make you leave this topic prematurely, but there's some very interesting breaking news that's just come over that I'd like to share with you. So if you want to finish this, I can hold it. Otherwise, we can switch now to...
We have to do the breaking news. Let's...
Okay.
Here we go.
Breaking news. This is quite interesting. Trump is now telling Floridians to vote by mail. Let's talk about... Talk about the ramifications of this. This is a big story because Trump, as you know, has spent considerable energy discrediting the Postal Service, discrediting vote by mail. And I know this upsets you more than anything else, conflating a vote by mail with absentee voting. And when in fact they are, as you've pointed out, all the same thing. This confounded when Trump first proposed that. When he first started fighting voting by mail, it confounded Republicans, especially county leaders across the country who had actually been sending out flyers advising people to register early and vote by mail, especially in the pandemic. And then Trump put a stop to all that. And what Trump didn't realize, others did, certainly those local county Republican leaders understood, that what Trump was doing was hurting himself, because Democrats, the polls show, have every intention of voting heavily by mail this year, while few Republicans plan to do so. And if the as the pandemic gets worse and people get more frightened, and with polling places closed, Trump is only, with what Trump is doing that he thought would help him win the election, he's actually been discouraging Republican voters to turn out
for him. Yes, it's amazing.
And discouraging them, and Democrats are hands and away winning, are on track to win, hands and away, the voting by mail. The percentages of Democrats voting by mail, much, much higher than they are among Republicans, and Trump has had a lot to do with that. He's hurt Republican voting by mail. Mm-hmm. Some of these states could get decided before many Trump voters have a chance to vote, and that's all Donald Trump's doing. It sounds to me like, from this breaking news, I sound a little like Barney Fife there. It sounds to me, or Don Knotts, it sounds to me as if he realizes now, or someone's finally gotten through to him, hey, dude, you're actually hurting yourself. You know, we can keep our fingers crossed, Bob, that this means he will try to inflict less damage on the Postal Service.
Yeah.
Now that he knows, and now that he's telling his supporters in Florida to vote by mail. Florida, which he's losing badly, by the way.
Yeah, this is a really amazing story going on right here. First of all, what you said about the Republicans actually being hurt by this. Again, right. Another great example of Trump always makes things worse for Trump. I mean, according to the Washington Post, state and local Republicans across the country, fearing that they're falling dramatically behind in a practice that is expected to be key to voter turnout this year, through mailers and Facebook ads, they are racing to promote absentee balloting among their own. The Republican Party is pushing absentee balloting across the country. Same thing with the Trump campaign. In fact, the Trump campaign is sending out emails suggesting to people how they can sign up for absentee voting, encouraging them to sign up to get absentee ballots and so on. All at the same time, Donald Trump has now spent, of other people's money, $20 million to fight some of these absentee ballot laws by state. Yeah. So you want to talk about a confluence of dumbness? They had originally intended to spend about $10 million. That was closer to the beginning of the year. They've now spent twice that, $20 million, to attack something that the Trump campaign and the Republican Party is now defending, with Trump stuck in the middle of this, with Trump not knowing where the hell to go or what to do. I mean, yesterday, during yesterday's Trump show, Trump said that he, quote unquote, has the right to disenfranchise Americans through an executive order that prevents voting by mail in the middle of this pandemic. So that was yesterday.
So less than 24 hours, he's turned completely around and is now urging the people of Florida, especially his supporters, to vote by mail. And here's the other thing they didn't calculate. With so many Democrats voting by mail, what if it rains on Election Day in a lot of different places? Rain always, I know it sounds like such a stupid thing, but rain always affects the turnout.
Yep.
And so if the only people going to the polls on November 3rd are Trump voters and it rains, well,
I mean, what's great about this, Jonathan Swan, actually, going back to the Axios interview, brought up all of these things with Trump, and he just, I mean, his response was basically, I'm gonna, I don't know how to respond to any of this, because Jonathan Swan even held up the Trump campaign email instructing people how to get absentee ballots.
Yes,
it was an incredible thing. And so Trump is basically stuck. He doesn't know how the hell to respond to all this. I'll be really interested to see what he says on today's Trump show about the same topic, or what he ends up tweeting. Because, I mean, no wonder the red hats are going indiscriminately bonkers right now. As you said, yelling at Burger King employees and slapping them in the face and just going indiscriminately nuts. It's because they don't know what to believe. Their president is telling them one thing into one ear, and then the same president is telling them something completely opposite in the other ear. And no wonder the steam is shooting out of their ear holes like that.
They are finding out that Trump's lies aren't true.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, did you know that a large percentage of the face masks sold on the market today are fraudulent?
Yeah.
Many of them claim to have levels of filtration they don't meet, or worse, have virtually no filtration at all. A very small number of manufacturers have respirator face mask models that are tested in the U.S. by the NPPTL and authorized by the FDA. Buying a mask model that has been FDA authorized is the best way to ensure you and your family are getting a true respirator mask. These masks filter to greater than 95% efficiency and can be reworn, making them a perfect choice, as wearing masks is one of the key things we can do to keep ourselves and our neighbors safe. Right now, the NewDealShop.com has FDA authorized N95 respirator masks with anti-fake stickers on every single package. These respirator masks are in stock in the U.S. and ship immediately for free for my listeners by adding the code SEXYLIBERAL, two words. You can even get 10% off the CleanFone UV sanitizer just for buying these FDA-authorized masks. Go to thenewdealshop.com now and get verified, authenticated, FDA-authorized N95 masks shipped immediately to your home or business. That's thenewdealshop.com, thenewdealshop.com. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
Oh, man, this is a great Betsy Aide and the Well-Known Strangers, Light Up My Summer, a brand new single. Oh, I love it. You know, just because we're in quarantine and everything is going upside down right now, doesn't mean we can't enjoy our summer a little bit, huh?
I love so many female vocalists, but what I like about this is her confidence.
Yes, Betsy Aide is just like oozing with confidence. This is amazing. Yeah. She's such an amazing performer, amazing singer. She was on The Voice. She was on Team John Legend for a while there, and couple seasons ago, I think she was on The Voice, so yeah.
I love the way 30 Rock used to make fun of these talent reality shows by referring to the NBC show America's Kids Got Dancing. I love
that. That's so funny. That's great. That. Okay, so let's get back to this Axios interview. On the topic of John Lewis, Jonathan Swan asked, John Lewis is lying in state. How do you think history will remember John Lewis? And Donald Trump, who hasn't read the material and is now forced to stand up in front of the class and give an answer about this topic, clearly doesn't know anything about John Lewis. He said, I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know. I don't know John Lewis. He chose not to come to my inauguration. He chose. I never met John Lewis, actually. So, hey, congratulations, Mr. President. Nailed it.
He went on to say he didn't come to my inauguration. He didn't come to my State of the Union address. That's his choice. But, you know, I didn't know him.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't know anything about John Lewis other than he didn't come to the inauguration. It's like the one thing he latches onto. It's like that, you know, when you ask a kid in high school, I say, can you tell me about, can you summarize that book that I asked you to read over the weekend? And the kid just stands there and describes the title of the book that's sitting right in front of them.
And never mind the psychiatrist and the psychologist. There isn't a person in America who's had a psychology class who doesn't recognize that as narcissism at its worst.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. And here on the black community, Trump says, I did more for the black community than anybody with the possible exception of Abraham Lincoln, whether you like it or not.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that is not a separate topic. That came up in the conversation about John Lewis. And that, Bob, is another example of Trump diverting when he doesn't have the answer. He doesn't know John Lewis, but I'll tell you this, I've done more for black people than any. Well, that's not the question, butthead. That's, you know, the question is, you know, how do you think John Lewis should be remembered? Mm. And part of his answer is, I've done more for black people.
Yeah.
My God, it's not an answer.
And then, of course, Jonathan Swan with the most appropriate response to that, he goes, you believe you did more than Lyndon Johnson, who passed the Civil Rights Act. And then Trump says, I think I did, yeah. And then Swan said, Lyndon Johnson, he passed the Civil Rights Act. Trump goes, ask, how has it worked out? If you take a look at what Lyndon Johnson did, how has it worked out? Hang on. Well, what is until he you, saying
and,
there?
Until you showed up, it worked pretty well.
That's right. Yeah, you screwed it all up, you idiot. And then on the stormtroopers beating up a Navy veteran in Portland, Swan goes, I'm sure you've seen disturbing footage of people in fatigues beating up the Navy veteran. And Trump goes, no. Here you go. Fake news. And then Swan goes, it's not fake news. And then Trump says, no. And then Swan goes, this is one of those drop-ins I was telling you about.
Right.
It's on video. It's on video. So you can't, again, denying reality is what's going on there.
And it doesn't matter. The truth has never mattered to him, not in grade school and not now. It's about shifting the blame off of himself. It's about, but what about what Hillary did? Or, you know, it's anything he can do to blame the Chinese.
Yeah.
Just anybody.
Another example here of denying reality. Jonathan Swan asked about Ghislaine Maxwell. He said, Mr. President, Ghislaine Maxwell has been arrested on allegations of child sex trafficking. Why would you wish such a person well? And then Trump says, first of all, I don't know that. She's been arrested on charges of child sex trafficking.
You could say the earth is flat, and he would say, we don't know that.
We don't know that. I can prove it. Prove it. Show me where the evidence is. And again, it's the same old thing. It's like, what numbers are you talking about? I don't know those numbers. You're making those numbers up. It's like when you can't defend a position, then you just attack the other person's numbers is what you do. That's the little trick he's playing there. Okay, so I noticed something last night. I was watching Ali Velshi, and he showed a graphic. He was filling in for Rachel Maddow last night. He showed a graphic on screen that stunned me to see it presented in the way it was presented. We all know the daily rate of new coronavirus infections is through the roof right now. Right. It is embarrassing. It is mortifying on so many different levels. But, I mean, this was a staggering way to look at it. He showed that Spain has zero new daily coronavirus cases. This is as of yesterday. Spain had zero new cases. France, zero new cases yesterday. Imagine living in France with zero new coronavirus cases. My God. I mean, the sense of freedom, the sense of accomplishment, probably amazing out there. Canada, 285. So Canada's number is a little bit higher, but guess who they're there? They're on the border of the world's trailer park right now.
Right.
Because the United States has daily new coronavirus cases as of yesterday, 48,840 fucking nine.
Well, that's because of more testing, Bob.
God damn.
Because as with cancer, the less screening you do for it, the less disease you will find.
I mean, you talk about a national disgrace and how someone who has presided over this degree of disaster is still polling where he's polling. I mean, I know we can debate the numbers, but the fact is he should be polling in the teens because of this. We're talking I mean, we're talking about a colossal, historic, and I'm not just talking about American history. I'm talking about human civilization, a kind of disaster that he has instigated.
That's a societal problem that we'll have to address after the election for sure.
Yeah.
And I think it will be easier to address after Trump's defeat. That defeat alone helps bring people around because people by their nature like to be on the winning side. And there will still be opposition. There will still be the crazies, the 15% driving around in their trucks with the fuck your feelings flags and slapping Burger King employees. That's our theme today.
That's right.
And that sort of thing will continue, but I think there'll be less of it, and it is something we have to address. And it goes to, and I saw some more heartbreaking news about Americans' view of the news media. But this is all about respect for science, respect for journalism, all of which have been pretty rough lately. Mm-hmm. But especially journalism, this struck me that a vast majority, like 80% of the public now thinks that the news media is biased. And by the way, Fox News and 24/7 cable news both have had a lot to do with this. But 80% of the public now thinks the news media is biased. an equal. I may have my numbers turned around here. A large percentage of Americans think it's biased, but it seemed an even larger percentage of Americans believed that the news media was conducting an important service. Yeah. So basically what I took from that is that they like the news media. They just don't like what it reports when it reports things they don't like.
Oh, yeah.
But it's because of this loss of respect for knowledge, this anti-intellectualism, this ignoring of science and this discounting of journalism that's put us in this place and made these inexplicably high poll numbers for Trump. They wouldn't exist were it not for that proud ignorance that's out there right now. And yeah. We have to address that. And I think we can and we must after the election.
It's so disconcerting, so disillusioning. I mean, during World War II, there was a historic coming together of yes. the American people to all focus on a singular effort. Everyone pitched in. And why is that? It's, you know, one of the things that we talk about all the time in terms of the federal government versus the state governments. The states could not individually fight Germany and Japan.
Right.
Therefore, also, the states cannot individually fight a global pandemic. There are certain things that require a national effort. There are certain national needs that require the federal government to step in and to coordinate between all 50 states plus the territories and so on. And Donald Trump, because he's such a lazy rat bastard and he doesn't want to get blamed for all this, he's trying desperately to separate himself, to kind of close his eyes, put his head down and get through this because he doesn't know how to handle it. That's the
issue. We only have two avenues, in my view, to handle this pandemic at this point. And I do believe, as many scientists and many citizens believe, that what we need is the 95% shutdown that we never had.
Yeah.
It was the 95% shutdown that gave France and Spain those good numbers, while the U.S. lazily and for a short period of time did a 50% shutdown and called that an effort. Well, we half-assed it. That ought to be good enough. Well, it wasn't. And all you have to do is look at the rising death numbers to know that. Yeah. I only see two avenues out of this. The election, which is still 3 months away.
Yeah.
The inauguration, now 6 months away. That's one avenue of rescue. The other avenue is for the states to coalesce and to do it themselves because the federal government won't.
Yeah.
Now, that's going to be a problem because we've still got a slew of Republican governors. And that's, by the way, how they travel. Scientifically, they're referred to as a slew.
Mm-hmm.
We have a slew of Republican governors. You had a beverage in your mouth. We had a slew of Republican governors who won't go along. So I just don't know what we do. But if as many states as possible coalesce for now and do it together, and then maybe a national effort will arrive, I'm sure it will, in late January, but that's the only way out of it. One of the things I'll be reporting about in my news this week is the fact that all these hopes that the president and we, the people, have pinned on a vaccine, we might be shooting a little high here.
Yeah.
There are a lot of pitfalls here, and things are not going to instantly get better when the vaccine arrives, and it will not mean an end to masks and social distancing because it will take months, maybe years to distribute and weeks for it to take effect in any individual.
Mm-hmm.
If you're sitting around on your hands, not wearing a mask, not social distancing because you're pretty sure, because Trump said a vaccine and science companies have said a vaccine is on the way, you're fooling yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the vaccine is not your rescue. It is not your panacea. You've got to freaking act now. All of us do.
You know, I'm going to get the vaccine. But you know what? I'm not going to get the vaccine because Donald Trump has said get the vaccine. I'm going to wait until Jody Hamilton was saying this on the Stephanie Miller show this morning. Right. I'm going to wait until Joe Biden tells me to get the vaccine because I don't trust Donald Trump's FDA. Donald Trump has spent, I don't know how long, the past year, past 2 years, weeding out people who are disloyal to him out of the bureaucracy.
Right.
And that includes the FDA. So you've got what's remaining are a bunch of Trump sycophants who will do whatever they can do in order to prop up their clown dictator. This is the standard operating procedure for them.
Mostly, but not entirely. Fortunately, some smarter minds remain. There's a lot of talk that Although Fauci is welcome to stay on Biden's arrival, Dr. Birx may have to look for work elsewhere.
I mean,
Her story is fascinating, by the way.
I think we've seen a lot of zombie movies in recent history in which people rush to get a vaccine for something, some miracle cure-all, only to be turned into raging undead or so, you know, some sort of crazy thing happens. I mean, so do you really want to get a vaccine that Donald Trump is urging to market before Election Day? Is this something that you're really confident in putting inside your body?
Will anyone trust a vaccine coming from the guy who pushed hydroxychloroquine and disinfectants? These are very real problems. We've already got anti-vaxxers.
Yeah.
We have the nation's black community, which is rightfully concerned about accepting a vaccine, since the black community has been used in the past by the federal government for bizarre and cruel vaccination experiments.
Yeah.
Their understandable reluctance to get the vaccine will prove even deadlier for that community because they are more susceptible to getting and dying from the disease. I'll be talking about a lot of the problems with vaccines and why we can't count on them to be the panacea. The only way out of this is us.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. I mean, we have to assume that a vaccine is further off than we had hoped. I mean, people are talking about maybe early 2021, maybe March 2021, somewhere around there. You know, we have to assume that we all have to continue doing the right thing, that the vaccine is going to be, at best, something that was rushed to market and is therefore probably a little shoddy.
You have no idea how much time it will take from the time that that vaccine is quote unquote available until the time that it begins to work. It may take weeks for it to work in an individual. Those individuals may need booster shots. We don't have a plan for distributing the vaccine. Mm-hmm. Trump says the White House, I should say, says that, military trucks will deliver them to your town. Probably the military hasn't been told this.
Yeah.
Where will the military trucks go? City Hall or CVS? Who's going to give the shots?
Yeah.
Who's going to provide the masks that both the giver and receiver of the shot will have to wear? Who gets the shot first? Will it be older people who are more susceptible, or will it be the young people who spread it and kill the old people? There are a lot of questions that have not been addressed. And what if it doesn't work? Vaccines fail. Sometimes vaccines do create. Sometimes vaccines kill. They killed people during the polio outbreak that the country fought.
Yeah.
And even with polio, and I don't have this in my news, so here's a bonus. 80%, they knocked down, after Dr. Salk's vaccine, polio was reduced by 80% in this country. This child crippling disease reduced by 80%. But 20% of it remained for years and years until they developed a sugar cube vaccine that kids could take. It continued. So the vaccine is not a solution. We must not wait for the vaccine. Do not pin your hopes on the vaccine. We all hope for one. There will be multiple vaccines. Which ones will work? Which ones won't?
Yeah.
How long will they be effective? There are a lot of hurdles to overcome between now and the vaccine doing any real good. And with so many people having doubts, whether it's the black community or people who don't trust Trump or people who never trusted vaccines, we've got to vaccinate 75% of the community in order to reach herd immunity. And vaccines, in the case of the flu vaccine, it's only 50% effective.
Yeah.
And guess what? The FDA's standard for the new coronavirus vaccine is 50%.
And you know,
good luck with the vaccine.
And after everything that's been going on in the cities with Donald Trump's paramilitary shock troops going into cities and rounding up and, you know, tear gassing protesters and so on, beating up moms and Navy veterans and so on, do we really want similar stormtroopers coming into our town and just indiscriminately jabbing people with just needles and syringes? Here, come on over here.
That was scarier than that frightened me, and that was scarier than my name show.
was it scarier than
Mike Elson?
Hey, you know what everyone hates? We hate it when people post photos of us when we're looking our weirdest. Either we have an awkward look on our faces or we're just not looking our best. Two solutions for your social media friends: a no unauthorized photos policy, and of course, Plexiderm. Plexiderm is a clinically studied serum that visibly eliminates your wrinkles, crow's feet, and under eye bags, all in the comfort of your own home. And take it from me, I took the test. I was amazed by the results, how quickly Plexiderm took away the little teeny tiny fine lines around my eyes. Go to tryplexiderm.com and use my code VOICES for half off a full-size bottle of Plexiderm, plus an additional $10 off. Or try a $14.95 trial pack today by calling 1-800-685-1292 and mentioning the code VOICES. Again, visit triplexiderm.com, use the code VOICES for half off a full-size bottle, plus an additional $10 off. Or try a $14.95 trial pack when you use the code VOICES at triplexiderm.com. Thank you.
Bob Seska.
Great John Carbonara. Let's get satisfied. The let's get part is in parentheses. That's technically satisfied, is the name of the song. But it's got the let's get at the beginning. Just thought I'd pass that along. BobSeska.com/music if you want to submit. Thank you.
In a word, funky.
Yeah, it's funky. Funky. It's, you know, funky. What? At the very beginning, it reminds me as if we had our own late night talk show. Just the theme would be perfect, I think, for like a late night.
It's fun to pretend.
Yes, it is. Make-believe, the land of our inner make-believe. Okay, so Dr. Birx warned that the country is in a new phase of the coronavirus pandemic and that the current outbreak is extraordinarily widespread. Meanwhile, Trump tweeted that Dr. Birx's performance has been pathetic, quote unquote. See, here's the problem. That's right. Donald Trump has no respect whatsoever for experts and institutionalists. He distrusts all of them. Instead, he's all about people like Alex Jones and Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson and Lou Dobbs and all of these snake oil salesmen. Yeah.
As far as where his information comes from and what he believes, that's true. There's so much. The Dr. Deborah Birx story is a fascinating one, as is Dr. Fauci's. But here's some things you need to know. And some of this is in my news this week, and some of it's not. So this is bonus material again. Mm-hmm. She was an Army doctor who became a hero to AIDS activists for her work alongside Dr. Fauci in the AIDS epidemic. She, up until recently, was beloved by AIDS activists who are now asking themselves what happened to Dr. Birx. And the answer that won't be in my news this week, but you get it here, is that she's had recently political aspirations. She would like very much, or at least career aspirations, she would have liked very much to have become the head of Health and Human Services, for example. Mm. And so she has been very flattering of Trump and very patient with him. He, for some reason, would listen to her more than anybody else in any given coronavirus meeting. He gave her more time. She was good at explaining things in simple terms and providing him very simple charts that he could read and understand.
Jesus Christ.
And she did it better than anybody else. And this was part of her ambition, part of her way of working her way up in government, she hoped, because she had developed these career aspirations. And now, Bob, she hasn't been allowed in the Oval Office for a couple of weeks. She's shut out like Fauci is. And most recently, and Trump called her pathetic yesterday because he wanted to, you know, I'm not sure what his motive was, but it hurt her badly. It made her realize that between being shut out and now being called pathetic publicly by the president, that all of her loyalty to him would not be repaid even the slightest.
Oh, yeah.
And that her dreams and aspirations have been shot down. But this is part of the Trump pattern of disregarding scientists, and back to your point, listening instead to Hannity.
Yeah, because they're all telling him bad news. They're making him, just by stating the facts, you know, Stephen Colbert used to say, reality has a well-known liberal bias.
Yes.
In this case, science has a well-known liberal bias. Right. Science is telling us that Donald Trump is doing a horrendous job here. So, of course, Donald Trump is going to try to disprove and discredit the scientists, including Dr. Birx, who, by the way, Donald Trump accused of taking the bait from Nancy Pelosi. Mm-hmm. And then... He says that she hit us, as you know, that's a direct quote. She hit us.
Trump believed that because Birx had spoken the truth about the danger of this pandemic and that schools shouldn't be reopened in some places, which goes against what Trump's been saying so much. Well, he's been painting this rosy picture and she gave reality. He's been calling for schools to open. She said, maybe not. This crossed Trump and made him so angry. He called her pathetic. In a tweet the following morning, she said what she said on Sunday talk shows. He tweeted Monday morning that she was pathetic. Monday afternoon, she was in the Oval Office for the first time in 2 weeks for the two of them to have a little talk. And then yesterday evening, Monday evening, Trump came out and said, no, I have a lot of respect for Dr. Birx. How he behaves in future weeks will determine whether or not that's true.
Yeah, sure. He has lots of respect for Dr. Birx until Dr. Birx starts talking, and then she's pathetic.
She falls out of line, and she said some real kiss-ass things about him. She said she's talked about how he's really good at absorbing the data. You know, I mean, he can't get grammar right, but he understands complex scientific data.
Yeah, I'm sure.
She did all this for... political. She's a Republican, so for political reasons, for career aspirations, she's tried to do this without, not at the expense of her scientific reputation, but thanks to her own fealty to Trump and thanks to Trump's lack of loyalty to her, she's lost some of that scientific credibility she's worked so hard for and actually earned during the AIDS pandemic.
See, you know, for a while, I thought her motivation was this. And I thought the similar thing about Tony Fauci is that they were all in this position where they're actually career government workers. I mean, they're not political appointees. They have been in place as career government workers, working their way up the ladder to the place where they are now. And so in that regard, there is not only a significant pension waiting for them after they retire, but at the same time, they want to keep their jobs. They want to maintain their reputation. So what they feel like they maybe need to do is to publicly appease Trump while behind the scenes doing the work that they have to do. They feel as if their work is so important that they have to just, you know, keep the monster in the closet for as long as they can by complimenting him and saying nice things about him in public and so on. Right. And at the same time, making sure they can continue to do their work with the science so on.
You have it right, but that's a little bit more background on Dr. Birx. I have both these doctors have such fascinating backgrounds, but as with them, as with my own feelings about my own career and life in journalism, the last thing, the worst thing that could happen to me would be to lose my credibility or to lose public faith. And Birx doesn't want that. She doesn't want that, but that's what's happening. And partly because of her loyalty to Donald Trump.
Right, right. Well, I just get the sense that this is a across-the-board strategy that has been developed, not only by people who work under Donald Trump, maybe within the government bureaucracy, maybe his own political appointees, but at the same time, overseas leaders, they all understand how exactly to manipulate Donald Trump. We saw with Jonathan Swan in the Axios interview, where on a few occasions he said, yes, you know, I don't dispute that you get big crowds and that your people love you to death and will do anything for you. I don't dispute any of that. You are very popular among your people. So he was throwing out, Jonathan Swan was throwing out these little compliments, these little nice things.
You gotta do it. Yeah. It's a lesson for life. It's how everybody should deal with everybody, really. It's just in his case, it requires so much more care.
Yeah, and it keeps him completely glued to his chair. So maybe that's maybe that's why.
In that glued to his chair in that toilet position.
Yes, because he does the same thing every time he is in certain settings. When he's sitting in a chair and there's no table in front of him, he sits forward like he's sitting on the shitter with the little dick tent in front with his hands. And that's always how he sits. Always, always, always. He always has to be shot from the left side.
That's how he does his best thinking, is in that position.
I don't know. It's these little things, man, that I look at. Like yesterday, I was hearing the Trump show, and every time he gets into that press room, maybe it's the really sensitive condenser mics in the press room, but all I hear are the sounds, the slobbery sounds of the gunk in his mouth and in his throat. Oh, and the sniffing.
Sniffing, yeah.
But it's that mucusy sound that he makes when he's talking in the press room. It makes me nauseous.
I haven't really noticed it, but I'm fascinated at how sick it makes you.
It's every time. I keep typing the word slobbery because that's the...
I know. You might be sitting too close to the screen. I'm not sure.
I think my volume's just up too high or something like that. But
all of the above.
Honest to God, I think it's that microphone in the press room because I don't always hear it. It's only when he's doing the Trump show in the press room. Holy shit, the sound of the gunk. Oh, please, please, someone adjust the EQ and the compression in the press room, please. I'm begging you. Thank you. Thank you for doing that.
You're very welcome. Very appreciative. I know how much you like it.
It doesn't, you know what? It's not as bad as the Trump gunk.
I'll work on it.
Not, but because it's you, it's Donald Trump, though. I don't even know.
I don't think you should tolerate it from me either.
It's like he downed a big bowl of lobster bisque right before going up and speaking. Oh, it's disgusting. Okay. Buzz Burbank News and Comment, the best hour of news you're going to hear all week. It's at buzzburbank.com. It drops every Thursday, also at realmnetwork.com and everywhere you get your podcast. So 5-star rating and review for Buzz Burbank News and Comment Thursday. Okay, so it's going to be probably at about 20,000 words at this point just based on what happened today alone.
No, you know, there's something magical about this week. It's not as overwhelming. I think I'm going to have a really nice report this week. I look forward to it. And thank you so much for that kind plug.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, make sure to subscribe to our Patreon page where we're going to be doing the postmortem show here in just a second. Patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. Thank you for supporting our podcast and all the podcasts, including Buzz Burbank News and Comment and all the podcasts on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network too.
Yeah.
All right. Postmortem show coming up next. We'll see you over there, folks. Bye-bye.